Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. This is Joyce Kyles, Executive Director of Walking Into a New Life. Thank you so much for joining us again on a wonderful, blessed Monday as we bring to you Boots on the Ground, Blog Talk Radio, on behalf of Walking Into a New Life. Walking Into a New Life's mission is to stop domestic violence and help stabilize victims through a series of projects, programs, and initiatives that we host throughout the year. We thank you so much for tuning in. And if this is your very first time, thank you so much for reaching out to us and listening to what we have to share. Boots on the Ground is my brainchild because I wanted to be able to provide an unfiltered platform for individuals to come and share their experiences and inform their communities about what they are doing to bring awareness and change. And so today I am extremely excited and honored about our special guest, and I will talk a little bit more about Walking Into a New Life at the end of the broadcast and the things that we have upcoming and how you can help support our continued efforts. But now I have the privilege and the honor to bring to you someone whom I have a great deal of respect for, someone that I admire dearly and I have for many years, and I was just blown away when she graciously accepted my invitation to join us on the show. So for those of you who may not be familiar with our guest, I would like to read just a little bit about her as I get ready to bring her on. So this week, we have the pleasure of having Sister Mildred D. Muhammad. She is an award-winning keynote speaker, CNN contributor, certified domestic violence advocate, trainer and author of Scared Silent. While many may know her as being the ex-wife of DC sniper John Muhammad, it is her amazing transformation and resiliency in the face of this highly publicized tragedy that continues to inspire and encourage audiences around the world. We admire her courage and the courage of her children, and we look forward to sharing her story and insights with you today. So, having said all of that, I introduce to some and present to others none other than Sister Mildred D. Muhammad. Sister Muhammad, thank you so much for joining us today.
Well, thank you for having me. I am so honored to be on your show.
Thank you. And again, I just cannot say enough how honored I am that you actually accepted and have the time to come on the show. So I wasn't as concerned about your acceptance as much as I was just the time, because I know that you're so busy.
Well, you gave me enough time to be able to be here with you today. And I did receive your book. We had that blizzard, so it took a little while to get here, but I did receive it. I just wanted you to know that.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. I appreciate you telling me that. And I hope that it is comprehensive and it makes sense and gives a more in-depth look into my life and my experiences and the things that I've learned in my journey as I continue to go through it myself. So I want to take a few minutes out to just have you, to, in your own way and in your own words, share a little bit about who you are and specifically about your book and the motive, the reason, the agenda behind writing it. So at this time, the floor is yours.
Well, I am Mildred Muhammad. I have become a public speaker on the issues of domestic violence and abuse, PTSD in regards to the military, but they can also be diagnosed with victims of domestic violence and those living in a hostile environment. My story comes into play with most people knowing about the DC sniper and about a man and a boy going around in the DC area killing innocent people. What most people don't know, what the police did not tell the public, was that I was the intended target, and that he was killing innocent people to cover up my murder so that he would come in and gain custody of our children. Prior to the shooting taking place in 2002, John and I We're married for 12 years. We have 3 children. And we had our own business. And it got to the point where I had asked him for a divorce because there were multiple affairs within the business. And we had a mobile auto repair service. So upon requesting the divorce, he became angry and stated he didn't want one, but he did move out. But he still had a key to the house. And he would come in the middle of the night, stand over me to listen to me breathe, stand up, and leave the house. Although the abuse that I suffered was not physical, it was still abuse. 80% of victims do not have physical scars to prove that they're victims. There are a lot of people walking around in pain, and just because you don't see my scars does not mean that I'm not in pain.
Absolutely.
So as I go through my story, I don't want anyone to feel that I'm not talking to you. And sometimes when you're in an abusive relationship, you feel that you have no way out, and you feel that nobody is going to listen. And what I did was I asked God to put people and resources in place to help me, because I do know what it feels like to be isolated and alone and no one believes you because they care so much or love or admire the abuser more, and they feel that you as the victim is only trying to make this person look bad or talking badly about them, or that's not the picture that they have of your abuser. Don't allow anybody to tell you that you're not a victim, because you know what's going on in your home. And once you start to believe the opinions of others, then you start to quiet your voice in what you know you need to do. So when we had gotten the paperwork settled for a restraining order, which the judge gave me a lifetime restraining order, because he told me I needed to get away from John, and I told him I was really trying to do that. John had our children for a weekend visitation and disappeared. We were just about to go to court on the custody issue, and he was gone. Called the police. They told me that he had just as much a right to the children as I did because we didn't have a parenting plan in place. It would be 18 months before I saw my children again. In those 18 months, my children were in Antigua. The interesting part is that I found out later that the people around me who was coming to check on me, who told me that I needed to get over the fact that John had our children, that I was young, I could have more children, those same people were the ones that were reporting back to John what I was doing. And they knew
where
my children were. So I had passed out, signing for a package for my mother because I had gotten down to only eating a half a slice of bread and crushed ice. I couldn't sleep because I've given up on my children. So I passed out. Doctors, they took me to the hospital, come to find out that I had lost a few units of blood. I was really on my way out. They admitted me into the hospital, put me on a blood transfusion. John called the hospital. Somebody told him I was in the hospital. And I asked him, I said, why won't you let the children call me? He said, well, we don't always get what we want, do we? See, John told me that I had become his enemy, and as his enemy, he would kill me. So I had two choices. I could go back to him and die, or I could hang up the phone and never see my children again. And I hung up the phone. I let out a scream. The nurses came in, and I asked them, could they trace the call? Well, they didn't have caller ID back then like they do now. But they traced the call back to a woman who had called the hospital for John. And at that point, that is when they told me they needed to put me in protective custody because my mother called the hospital and said that John had just called her and said he was on his way to the hospital to kill her daughter. So once they took me out of that, it put me in a shelter, which changed my name, changed my clothes, and I couldn't let anybody know where I was. And I was in that shelter for 8 months. So as my sister lived here in the Maryland area and my mother was sick, and she called and said, you know, Mama's sick and I need help. Did you find your children? I said, no, I didn't find them. She said, I said, but I can wait over there. I came over here to help my mother, although the news said that I fled over here. I didn't. My mother was sick. I came over here to help my sister with my mom. Once I got here, called the FBI. I told them what happened. They told me they couldn't do anything for me. So I had to call the FBI agency back in Seattle, which I did, and they said, well, Ms. Muhammad, since we know he's looking for you, what we want to do is put you in the middle of a parking lot and use you as a decoy. I said, excuse me, I'm not doing that. And then a few months later is when I got my children back. And we went into hiding here in Maryland. I didn't tell anybody what was going on because John said, I'm going to kill you. So for me, I would be putting other people in harm's way if I told them what was going on. Many victims don't say anything because the first thing people will ask you is, why do you stay? Like, I really signed up to be beaten. I really signed up to be a victim of domestic violence. I mean, I had one person say, well, you picked them. I didn't pick this person that is displaying these types of behavior. Abusers disguise who they are in the beginning of a relationship, because if I tell you, yes, I'm an abuser and what I want to do is I just want to beat you up, make you feel like you're nothing, isolate you, take you away from your family, do you really think someone will agree to that type of behavior? No. So they disguise it. And that's what happened. They don't. You don't know what you have until after you're in a relationship. And my mother always say, you don't know a person until you live with them.
That's so exactly right. Mine used to say that too.
You can, you know, because you can have all the skeletons in the closets all day long, but as soon as you start living with somebody, then all them skeletons coming out the closet. There's no way you're going to hide who you are at that point. And so when the shooting started, you know, they told us to look for two Caucasians in a white box truck. That's what we were looking for. October the 23rd, ATF knocked on my door. They asked me when was the last time I had seen John. My hands started sweating. I said, why are you asking me about John? I said, oh, we just want to know when was the last time you seen him. I said, well, the last time I seen him was a year ago at an emergency custody hearing. Got my children back. And you haven't seen him since then? No, sir. I said, have you heard about any shootings anywhere else? I said, no, sir. What, they took me down to the police department to ask me more questions. And that's when they told me, look, Ms. Muhammad, we're just going to have to tell you. We're going to name your ex-husband as the sniper. I said, what? I said, yep, going to name him as the husband. Do you think he would, or name him as the sniper? Do you think he would do anything like this? I looked up in the corner of the wall, and I said, yes. They said, well, why would you think that? I said, because we were watching a movie, and I don't remember the name of it, but he said, I could take a small city, terrorize it. They would think it would be a group of people, and it would only be me. I asked him, why would he do something like that, and he changed the subject. Then they said, well, Ms. Muhammad, didn't you know you were the target? I said, no, why would I think that? I said, well, there was a man that was shot down the street, and there was another man that was shot 2 miles from you. Ms. Muhammad, you were the target. They put me and my children, my sister and my brother-in-law, into protective custody until they caught John. That's the part they don't tell anybody. And at that point, I started to try to get counseling for my children. Unfortunately, we came across unethical counselors. Not that all counselors are bad. It's the unethical ones seem to find their way to me. And I went to the library, got a book on counseling, and learned how to counsel me and my children myself. And I became a national spokesperson on the issues of domestic abuse and violence and tried to help every person that comes to me for help. I don't turn anybody away. I don't tell them no. I say, let me work on it. I'll get back to you. We're going to work this out. We're going to find a way. Somebody somewhere is going to help you. And that's what I've been doing ever since.
Yes, you have.
My
and
book
has been
titled
such an inspiration to everybody. Like, I just wanted to interject just a moment. And just first of all, your story is beyond amazing. Sometimes when I've gone back and you know, I've watched the movies and the videos and the trailers, and I've heard you speak multiple times, and it is still very mind-blowing that we have individuals who, you know, who could think so deeply into how can I hurt this person that we've said that we love and we care about, and the lengths we will go to terrorize individuals. And one of the things that I really wanted to quickly point out that you mentioned earlier, for those of you, first of all, who are just tuning in, this is Joyce Kyles, Executive Director of Walking Into a New Life, and you are listening to Boots on the Ground. We have the pleasure of having Mildred D. Muhammad on the line with us to share her experiences dealing with domestic violence. And as I mentioned at the top of the broadcast, that many people may know her as being the ex-wife of the D.C. sniper, which was John Muhammad. But I really want to make sure that people understand who she is as a woman, as a mother, as an author, as a survivor, as an advocate. And that was why I wanted her to be on the show. So we have spent some time talking about what things led up to the place where she is now. And I just wanted to make sure that we listen to both sides and understand who she is as Mildred and the things that she's been able to do with her experiences, and they are to be commended. I want to just point out also that she mentioned something early on that I think is really relevant for people to understand, and that is we don't always see the physical signs of abuse. I can certainly attest to some of the worst experiences that I've had with abuse were those that you could not see. And I often share with people that I had two relationships that were abusive. And it was the second marriage that was much longer, and it was far more abusive, and we never fought. And so when she speaks about 80%, you know, of what takes place is non-physical, it's everything else. And these are the types of things that I want our listening audience to take away from our broadcast every week, that abuse is not always physical. It's emotional, it's spiritual, it's financial, it's sexual, it's psychological. And another great point that she mentioned, and that was about counseling. And there are definitely some unethical individuals out there who are seeking opportunities to capitalize on your hurt and your pain. So it's very important to do your due diligence and research and make the best informed decision that you can when it comes to seeking out help. And I want to also point out something that's on your website, too. You have a clip that I think is a minute and 30 seconds long, but it talks about reaching out to people and being specific about one person that you speak to about what your intentions and your plans are in terms of leaving. And I think that's very important, because when you start sharing too much information with people, then it has the potential of getting back to the abuser. And I like that you also tied in the fact that some of the people that you knew and that you trusted and that you considered, you know, allies to you were actually the same people that were giving him information about you. And so it's very important that we are selective in what we share, when we share it, and with whom we share it with. So having said that, I just wanted to kind of point those things out and just tell you thank you so much for your transparency in all of this.
Yes, ma'am. I mean, we have to be, because my thing is I never know who's listening, and it's important that your opinion is more important than other people's opinion of you. If I would have listened to what other people were telling me to do or not to do, I would not be alive today. Because all of them, you should stay with him. you're not doing what you're supposed to do. You're not being a good wife. You're not being a good mother. That's what he told other people. He poisoned the well when he took the children. So when I went to those people for help, they said, oh, John told us you were going to face something like that. But you know what, Mildred? I mean, you know, you're young. You can have more children. Stop tripping. At least they're with their father. That's what they said to me. When John was caught, the community was angry with me. I knew they were angry with John, but they couldn't get to John. So they turned all of that hostility towards me and my children. So
amazing.
I took those hits. I didn't debate with anybody. I didn't talk back, didn't try to make a reason for nothing. They say, well, Mildred, you know, if you would have stayed with him, he just would have killed you. If you would have stayed on the West Coast, then the people on the East Coast would still be alive. How dare you call you and your children victims? And how dare you bring this drama into this quiet community? My children never heard anything because I protected them from every vile word that was being said. I needed them to be emotionally well. If it meant that I was going to take that hit, then that's what I did. They're in their 20s. They're just now finding out all the things that were said about us and them at that time. I refuse to allow anybody to hurt my children. I just couldn't.
And
if I'm an emotional mess,
would be.
Then my children are emotional mess. And that's why it's important that as victims and survivors of domestic violence, that we find a way to channel that energy. Mine was in journaling. I couldn't talk to anybody because everybody had an opinion, and their opinions were wrong. So I didn't want to have to deal with other people's stuff piled on top of my stuff, and then I have created these additional bags that I'm carrying in order to overcome my emotional trauma. So I began to listen to my voice. My voice is as important as anybody else's. My opinion is as important as everybody else's. So it's okay to listen to me. It's okay to hear how I feel. It's okay to hear my pain. It's okay for me to cry. It's okay for me to scream. It's okay. I'm not Superwoman. I'm not Storm. Storm is my favorite X-Men character. That's why I say that.
Okay, all right. I can relate.
Because Storm,
I'm a Wolverine and Storm, yes.
At the time, I wasn't Storm, but I'm Storm now. Why do I say that? Because Storm controls the elements. She sets the thermostat in the room. She don't by what other people say or feel. She wanted the rain, it rains. She wanted to be cloudy, it's cloudy. She wants the sun to shine, the sun shine. Who I am, I'm Storm.
All right.
it's just, I love it. To be free of emotional pain, it's a wonderful place to be. Don't ever allow anybody to tell you that you will always be a victim. You will always carry those bags around with you. No, you won't. You got a lot of work to do, but you can get there for real.
Yes, you can. You are definitely living proof of that. And I'm just so pleased that you had time to come on the show and be able to share with us. We are getting down to the last few minutes of the show, so I would love for you to take this time to just inform our listening audience how they can get in touch with you.
Well, you can get in contact with me through my website. It's MildredMuhammad.com. I answer all emails within 24 hours. I know what it's like to wait for somebody, and I don't I won't have you waiting. You can also see some of my videos. You can also order my book, Scared Silent, from my website, and I will autograph it and mail it back to you. There are also two other books. One is called Planning My Escape, and that is a comprehensive safety plan, step by step. As Joyce was saying earlier, only tell one person, one trusted friend, that you are planning to leave. Any more than that, the information will get back to your abuser and all that planning will be for nothing. You get this safety plan, do not take it home. Keep it at work or with a trusted friend. Adjust it or modify it as you go along. There's another book called Dare to Heal, and that's a journal. I ask the questions, but you answer them. Those questions are specifically to into a certain emotion that you may have been afraid to tell someone else for fear of judgment or rejection. When you write it down, you get it out of your head, you can see your pain, you can deal with it, you can move on from it. Because we are a visual people, if I don't see my pain, if I don't see your pain, I'm not dealing with you. That's why 80% of victims don't have scars. Nobody takes us seriously. Oh, you're not a victim. What did you do? Like, I did something. Abusers need to be held accountable for their actions. We have to stop protecting them. They need to be held accountable.
Absolutely. And that actually is a wonderful way to end this particular segment. I am just so honored and pleased to have had you to join us on the show today. Thank you so very much. And for those of you who follow this show each and every week, you know that we always share the replays and we always post our special guest information on our Facebook fan page so that you can find it. We ask that you listen to the replays in case there was something that you missed. And we are in process of rebuilding our website, so I am so excited about the launch, which will be coming very soon. Please know that as far as upcoming events, we're walking into a new life is concerned, that we are having our quarterly Pampering Support Day, which will take place this Saturday, which is February 27th. It's from 11 until 1. As always, it is absolutely free. It's for survivors, for victims, and for advocates. Because as you know, Sister Mildred, we have to actually pour into ourselves, and we have to allow someone to pour into us. When we do this work,
Yes, ma'am. We
give so much of ourselves and we internalize so much, we want someone to do something for us sometimes. So that quarterly Pampering Support Day consists of a support group meeting, and then it's always followed with some pampering and support activities. Last time we had the honor of having Raheem Devon organization, Love Life Foundation, to sponsor Pamper Day, and I know you know about that because I saw you in one of the videos. So he actually chose our organization in October, so that was an extreme honor for us and for me personally on so many levels because I followed his music. But in closing, I just wanted to say thank you again for joining us. It was indeed our honor to have you on the show. Continue to do the work that you are doing. You are changing lives and changing opinions about DV. So thank you so much for that.
Thank you again, Joyce. I really appreciate this opportunity.
And for those of you who have tuned in, thank you so much. As always, we look forward to having you to join us on Monday from 5:30 until 6 p.m. Central Standard Time. This is Joyce Kiles, Executive Director of Walking Into a New Life. Do find us on Facebook, Twitter. We're on all social media platforms. And, of course, we are a tax-deductible nonprofit 501c3 organization. So, as always, your donations, no matter the size, big or small, goes towards helping those who are transitioning from victim to victorious. Thank you again for tuning in. And please, please, please share these broadcasts with other individuals because, as we often share, the information is not dated. So it doesn't matter if it's a show from last year. The information, even if the event may have passed, the information to help those who are transitioning out of domestic violence and sexual assault is useful no matter what part of the country you're in. So seek your local hotline for domestic violence, reach out to your coalition, and let us work towards ending domestic violence. Thank you. Be blessed.